Solomonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 330 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 1st, 2014. I am the Solomonster. It is Payback Sunday in more ways than one. Payback Sunday for me after my Saturday night. But we soldier on here. It is WWE Payback tonight on the WWE Network, or for those of you still ordering on pay-per-view, I don't know why. Not that these shows are worth the $60 they still charge for them, but however you are seeing Payback, the event is tonight. We'll get into predictions here in just a second. But first, I want to give some PayPal shout-outs to people who have donated to the show over the course of the past week. Anthony McGregor, The Wrestler Albert Morris, Romit Nightmare Oja, and Billy Kill 'Em All Kinney. Thank you guys for donating. You can always make a donation if you want to on thesolomonster.com. Thesolomonster.com, right-hand side, will be the PayPal box. And you can put in whatever you want, $10 or more. You get a wrestling nickname. Make things fun here. So please do consider that. And also, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. We have a custom URL here for this podcast where if you use it and you sign up, regardless of whether you stick with it or not, but I think you'll like it and you probably will. But free for 30 days, you can sign up. You go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster and sign up from there. And that's another way to help out the podcast. You get free 30 days of the Audible service. You get one free audiobook download that you get to keep regardless of whether you stick with it or not. And again, you got 30 days to sample the service. It's a very good service. I know some of you guys have sent me messages with the names of some of the books that you've ordered, and you listen to it on your commute to work, at the gym. If you don't want to actually read the physical book, that's where Audible can be very very convenient. So please consider doing that, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And speaking of Solomonster, going forward, there was a thread going in our Facebook group page about a week ago, and it got me thinking, you know, we probably should have a formal hashtag that people can use on Twitter, and I guess even Facebook now, you can use hashtags on Facebook. But, you know, whenever a new show goes up every single week, and I post a link, and I ask people to retweet it and stuff like that, and if you're going to talk about the show, give feedback to the show, ask questions, talk about something you heard on the show, please consider using that hashtag. Hashtag Solomonster is the official tag for this podcast, I think, going forward. It makes sense for that to be it. So I just wanted to mention that here up front. For those of you who are into your hashtagging, we all know WWE is, but they'll never use that hashtag. So hashtag Solomonster is the one to use on Twitter and Facebook as well, and keep the conversation going. Tonight, WWE Payback is in Chicago, and for those of you who are not sports fans, you may want to keep in mind that there is a lot of hockey excitement in the city of Chicago, as there is here in New York, because our New York Rangers are going to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time since 1994, and the Chicago Blackhawks are going to a Game 7 in their series, and that is tonight. So there could very well be a lot of distracted people in the audience at the pay-per-view tonight. Just a little FYI there, depending on how things go with the Blackhawks. A lot of upset people, or maybe it'll add to the excitement of the wrestling show. Who knows? But that is going on tonight as well. I assume that a certain former WWE champion and his soon-to-be bride will likely be cheering on the Blackhawks at that game as well. But tonight, they have some big shoes to fill after that NXT TakeOver show on Thursday, which I can't wait to get into because that show is so freaking awesome. We'll have a full review of that in a couple of minutes here. But tonight is all based around really three things. One is Daniel Bryan's decision. We learned on Raw Monday night that Daniel Bryan has a decision to make tonight, and that is whether or not he does the right thing and surrenders the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or if he opts not to do so, because apparently the rationale here is the authority does not want to strip Bryan of the title. It'll only make him a martyr. The reactions will only grow louder and louder, and they don't want that. So they want Bryan to do the right thing. If he can't compete, if he can't, you know, defend the championship for all of his legions of fans, he needs to surrender it. If he doesn't do so, then his wife, Brie Bella, is fired. And so that is the conundrum he finds himself in. And, you know, look, I wouldn't be surprised if they do an angle where Brie is fired and she's off TV. There's a rumor floating around that she's pregnant. I don't think there is any truth to that at all. I can't say for sure, but if they wanted to do an angle like that to get her off TV, I guess it would make sense, but I don't think that's the case. Either way, Brian's not giving up the title. I mean, maybe he does, and I look like a fool for saying that. I just don't see it happening. Or maybe he will, you know, for the sake of his wife, and then just before he does so, Brie comes out, or Brie stops him from doing it, and she says, no, I can't let you do this, I can't let you do... Something like that I could see happening, but I don't see Brian giving up the championship, and it seems like they expect him back within the next month or so. You know, he's still being advertised for some shows, I know, in the early part of July. I don't know if he'll be ready for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Apparently, from what I read, I think it was in the Observer this week, the idea still, when Brian comes back, is to pick up the feud with Kane and do that Buried Alive match that they had originally planned for this show. So we may yet still get a Buried Alive match between the two of them. I don't see Brian losing the title. But the main event matches are Evolution against The Shield, no holds barred elimination match, and John Cena against Bray Wyatt in a feud that must end. That's my little stipulation there, because the Cena-Wyatt stuff is just completely played out now. There's nothing else they could do with it. Hopefully they blow this thing off tonight and they move on with Cena, they move on to something else with Wyatt. The match last month at the pay-per-view was awful. That cage match was terrible. It did nothing to get me to want to see these two guys wrestle again. And this time it'll be a last man standing match. So that really is what this event is all about. Everything else is just undercard fodder, really. There's nothing else on the show that's been built up as much as these rematches from a show we already saw. So Evolution and The Shield. I'm going to go with The Shield here. I know Batista's on his way out. I think his last appearance might be Raw this week. I think he's popping in at the NXT tapings in the next couple of weeks as he lives in the area. But he's finishing up. He's going to be doing promotion for his new movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. So he's really leaving this time. And I just don't see the sense in having Evolution go over The Shield regardless, because here's another feud that's completely played out. I've enjoyed the stuff they've done. Their match at the pay-per-view last month was awesome. It was the best match on the show. Here we're going to get the rematch, and I'm sure this is also going to be a kick-ass match. You got six really good guys in there who know what their roles are, who are very good at what they do. The Shield, of course, is awesome. And this time it's an elimination match. So the way I look at it is The Shield goes over here, probably Roman Reigns, last man standing at the end. Much the same way, you know, they put him over really strong at the Survivor Series. He got like four eliminations in that match, and I'm sure he's still their little pet project for the future, their next big star. So I think Shield goes over. Roman Reigns may well end up as the last man standing here, but Shield wins. Cena and Wyatt, I'm going to go with John Cena. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear it. I think Bray Wyatt should win and then move on to something else, but he won the last match. Cena won the first one, so this is the rubber match. And I just don't see what they do with Cena. Let's say if he loses this match and this feud does come to an end and Bray Wyatt moves on to something else, what happens to John Cena at that point? You know, he's already been phased down, but how much more can he be phased down? He's still their top guy. He's not the champion, but he's still their top guy. Sells more merchandise. He's featured on all of the posters and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's still the face of that company. Probably always will be until the day that he just doesn't want to do it anymore. So I figure he's going to win this match, and we're going to move on to the next feud. And they figure, oh, well, Bray Wyatt got to work with John Cena, so he's stronger for it. I think Bray Wyatt will be fine. If he loses this match, it's not the end of the world. I would prefer he go over. I think John Cena will be the one, though, to take the win here. Bad News Barrett, Rob Van Dam, Intercontinental Championship match. I am holding out hope. They have Wade Barrett come out to CM Punk's music in a hoodie with his back turned. We all saw that meme online many weeks ago. How great would that be? If any, you know, and people say, well, it would be great heat, and I think it would be, but part of me wonders if the crowd wouldn't actually cheer him. Like boo him at first, but then cheer him for how awesome that stunt would be. You know, he's already getting cheers from a lot of fans anyway. But it would be such a great heat getter just to have him come out and do that. Turn around, and I know he's taller than CM Punk, but you can mask it. Like, again, he wears the full hoodie, he comes out, immediately turns his back, camera kind of zooms in on him, and then he spins around and says, "I'm afraid I've got some bad news," and people just go ape shit. I don't think they're going to do it, but that would be so cool. So Barrett and RVD. RVD is a good utility guy for them to have on the roster now. What I mean by that is he's still beloved. He still has a lot of fans. He can still go. You know, he's 40-something years old. He's still, you know, very good in the ring and can move around better than some guys who are younger than him. But I look at Rob Van Dam, and he, you know, he does look older. He is a little bit slower. And, you know, there's no reason for Rob Van Dam to hold the Intercontinental title right now when I think guys like Barrett could probably benefit from it more. And Barrett should not be losing to RVD. Barrett needs to keep this momentum that he's got going here. So I figure Bad News Barrett's going over. He wins the match, retains the Intercontinental title. Sheamus and Cesaro, United States Championship match. I'm going to go with Cesaro here. I figure he's winning the title. I'm okay with it only if it's to transition him into a feud with Sami Zayn. If Cesaro is going to win the U.S. title and there's no real plan for him other than, well, he's with Heyman, let's put a belt on him, it's the kiss of death. I would rather him not win the belt if that's the idea here. But Sami Zayn is a guy, if you don't pay attention to NXT, the former El Generico, he's easily the most popular guy in the NXT brand, and he's more than ready for the main roster. And, you know, given the way he's been booked of late, he hasn't been winning very many matches. But he's been having kick-ass matches on every show. I think it seems to me like they're just about ready to pull the trigger on him and bring him on up. You know, he had some dark matches on the European tour with Adrian Neville recently that leaked online. It's time. It's time to call this guy up. Call him up. You don't need weeks of vignettes for him or anything like that. You know, they do that for most of the guys, and I like that. They built up Bo Dallas for all those weeks, and they built up Adam Rose and guys like that. But he doesn't need that. Not every single person needs to be built up the same way. You know, come up with a way to introduce him right away on TV and let him be the one to take the title from Cesaro. So my idea would be to have Cesaro win the belt and pretty quickly thereafter, I don't know about the next night, and I know that kind of copies what they did with Paige the night after WrestleMania where she won the Divas title from AJ. But whether it's the next night, the next week, couple weeks later, whatever the case may be, transition that belt off Cesaro onto Sami Zayn. And meanwhile, Sheamus loses the title here in this match, and that opens the door for them to turn him heel. That's the direction I would go in for both of these guys. Cesaro's going to be a face before this year is over. I think we all know that. He's not going to be a heel for much longer. Do something now with him and Sami Zayn, because it works so much better with the heel versus face dynamic. You know, I figure Zayn's coming up anyway. So, bring him on up. Let him work with Cesaro a little bit. Get that out of the way. And then Cesaro can move on. You know, eventually the split with Heyman, I'm sure. Maybe they'll do something with Cesaro and Brock Lesnar. Certainly wouldn't mind seeing that. But Zayn needs to be on the main roster. He's gone as far as he can go on the NXT brand. You know, he can still wrestle there, here and there. A lot of guys that made it to the main roster still stick around on NXT for at least a few weeks, maybe even longer. Cesaro is still wrestling matches on NXT as of just a few months ago. You know, and he loves it down there. He was down there for TakeOver. You know, he loves being down there and working with those guys. So that's how I would kind of book this whole thing to go down. Put the strap on Cesaro, transition him over to something with Zayn. Sheamus loses the belt, meanwhile, and is not very happy about that, and however you want to do it, ultimately he goes heel. He'll be better off for it, because as a face, he's stale. He's stale and pale. That's what Sheamus is. Paige and Alicia Fox, Divas Championship match. Figure Paige is going over here, but if Alicia wins, I wouldn't mind. Alicia Fox is the most interesting character they've had in that Divas division since AJ first went crazy. And you go back even before AJ, you probably go all the way back to Mickie James. So I'd like to see them keep the momentum going that Alicia has. I mean, she can only have so many meltdowns on TV before it gets old. At some point, they've got to have her do something else. They've got to add another layer to her character, whatever that is. I still think Paige is winning. Probably should win, too. She hasn't exactly been booked strongly as the champion so far. You take it off her now, she might be perceived as a failure, which is not what you want. So I'm going to go with Paige here. But I do like Alicia. Big E and Rusev, Battle of the Missing Names. I think we get either a DQ or some kind of a draw with no winner here in this match. I just don't see them having Big E tap out, you know, not in their first match. If it is a DQ, though, I figure Big E wins, although it doesn't really matter. You know, if there's a DQ, who cares who wins? But yeah, like a DQ or a no contest, that's how I see this going down. And finally, El Torito and Hornswoggle on the pre-show mask versus hair match. El Torito is my pick. Pretty obvious why Hornswoggle has been growing his hair out long since he resurfaced on television many months ago. It's to have it chopped off in an angle. You know, here we are. One of our listeners, actually, from Ireland, Mark, asked me if I thought that if Torito lost his mask here in this match, it might finally set up that minis division that I've pitched here before. I guess because if he gets rid of the bull costume, he can be the face of the division, I guess is his logic behind it. He should be. The guy is that good. He should be the face of a minis division if they wanted to bring one back. But I don't see that happening. As soon as they announced that stipulation, it just made total sense to me why Hornswoggle's been growing his hair out. So I figure it's choppy choppy for Hornswoggle tonight. And that is the card. I guess they'll have the pre-show on the network. I don't know who the guest panelists are. Look, they've got some big shoes to fill after the NXT show. That's all I have to say. Good luck on that. It's kind of embarrassing in a way if they actually have a show that can't measure up to the developmental show. You know, what does that say? What does that say about WWE if, you know, you've got people paying money to see your main stars on pay-per-view and the event turns out to not be as good as the show with the guys who supposedly aren't good enough yet to make it to the main roster? It just seems like a weird dynamic there. But who knows? Maybe it'll light a fire under them. Maybe those guys won't want to get shown up by the Tyler Breezes and Sami Zayns and Adrian Nevilles of the world. So maybe it'll end up being a great show tonight. Raw this past Monday was not a great show. Raw was in Knoxville, Tennessee. And there were some good things on the show, but just another 3 hours that for the most part was just boring and dull. These shows are just lifeless ever since WrestleMania. And the crowds have been reacting accordingly. Apparently they're getting very frustrated with the crowds. They've had John Cena now on the last couple of shows, from what I read in the live fan reports. When the show goes off the air and they have the dark segment or the dark match, Cena gets on the mic and actually makes a comment to the effect of, boy, you know, you guys either, you know, aren't very loud or you're not as excited, whatever word it is that he used. And, you know, I read that and I just laugh. It's like, maybe that has something to do with the shows that you guys are putting on. Don't put that on the fans. If you gave the fans something exciting that they wanted to see, they would cheer. They would clap, they would cheer, they would scream, they would bring their signs, all that stuff. They're not doing that because they're not excited by the shit that you're giving them. So that's a problem that you guys have to deal with internally. That's not our fault, that's your fault. But Daniel Bryan was back on this show, first live appearance since neck surgery. Got a pretty good reaction from the crowd in Knoxville, one of the louder reactions of the show. That's where Stephanie confronted him and gave him the ultimatum and said, at Payback on Sunday, you either forfeit the title, which he refused to do on this show. And that's when the ultimatum came into play. Either he does that or Brie is fired. And I've gone over what I figure happens there. We had Bray Wyatt's message to the C Nation on the show. This was probably the best segment on the show. I mean, the ending with Evolution and the Shield, the contract signing stuff was pretty good. This wasn't bad. It was unique. You know, it was unique in that Bray, he did one of his Bray Wyatt promos, which he's very good at. I think the problem with Bray Wyatt promos is they all kind of blend together. None of them really stand out. It's just him saying a lot of the same stuff in a very creepy way, and he laughs at himself. And there's no, I think we're at a point now where there really is no uniqueness to it. So it just kind of all blends together. But here, he turned his attention to Jerry Lawler, and he said, you know, Lawler, you're on commentary every week, feeding these lies to people about Cena and how great he is, and, you know, you're friends with him, and he asked Lawler to come in the ring, and Lawler said, I'm not going up there. So they went out to go get him. JBL leapt to his defense, got beaten down. JBL took a clothesline from hell from Luke Harper, which was quite apropos from the guy here who made that move famous. Well, actually, I can't say that. I mean, Stan Hansen. There were plenty of people who used a lariat before JBL did, but probably in modern-day WWE, he's most well-known for that move, and he got laid out by his own move and took a bump. Apparently, it was a wicked clothesline because JBL didn't get up for about 15 minutes. He just laid there. They had to take him backstage for medical attention. I saw people were upset that he came back out later in the show, like, oh, you know, he didn't sell the injury. He was back and joking and everything else, and it's like, he took a freaking clothesline, dude. You know? He's a big guy still, and he took a clothesline. So it's okay. You know, if they hit him with a chair, if they give him a pile driver on the steps, if they set him on fire, then maybe I'd agree with you. But, you know, it's like, calm down. He took a freaking clothesline. He left for a few segments. He got checked out. He didn't have a concussion, so they sent him back out there. And it was actually kind of cool, because when they did, Lawler, and I'll get back to the segment here in a second, but Lawler stood up and extended his hand, and he shook hands with him, and then they went back to insulting each other and cracking jokes. But so after JBL gets laid out, they bring Lawler in the ring, and they're going to, clearly they're going to assault Lawler, but Bray Wyatt talks and talks and talks, and finally he says, I just want you to know, I didn't want to have to do this. He goes to give him Sister Abigail. I knew he wasn't taking a bump. It just wasn't going to happen. They're not going to let Lawler take bumps ever again in their ring. I would be shocked if he ever takes a bump, let alone wrestles a match in WWE after the heart attack deal. They're just not going to let it happen. So before he could get the move off, Cena runs down to the ring, as only Cena can. I always enjoy it when Cena runs to the ring. It's high comedy. He slides in. He gets beaten down. And they're prying his eyelids open. They want him to see what's going to happen. Did you see some of the faces Cena was making when they were holding him and they were prying his eyes out? I mean, what, this guy, his facial expressions are just ridiculous. For a main event guy, his facial expressions are the dirt worst. It's like, and there's pictures online that people took still shots of him like sticking his tongue out. It looks like a monkey. I'm like watching this going like, what are you, a baboon? Like what's wrong with you? Who makes faces like that? John Cena does, apparently. Just took me out of the moment. The Usos ran out to make the save when he was going to try to lay out Lawler again, so that's when it broke out into a brawl. Lawler was rescued. Cena got on the mic. Actually cut kind of a passionate promo for a change and cut the comedy out. Told Bray Wyatt that payback is a bitch. I think it would have been cool if he would have added, and so is Sister Abigail at the end there. And then just cut back and show Bray Wyatt all angry on the outside. But they didn't do it. Here's an honest question for all of you. I want to throw this out there to you guys. Because I'm watching these shows when Cena's teaming up with the Usos, and the Usos are coming out to save him. And, you know, they've been trying to give the Usos, I guess, a rub by associating them with Cena. And the Usos are already very popular. Okay, they don't have a problem, I don't think, getting over with the fans. The fans love the Usos. Most fans, anyway. But my question is this. Do you think the Usos pairing off with Cena these past few weeks have done more to help or hurt them? I know why WWE is doing it. And you would think that putting them with him is a good thing. You know, again, it's giving them a rub from the biggest star on the roster. But I would argue it's actually done more to hurt them than help them. People just don't like John Cena. And it's an irrational hate. Again, I don't hate John Cena. I'll make fun of him because he just does some stupid shit that he should be called out on. A guy in his position, you know, should know better than to make stupid, silly faces in the ring and, you know, agree to go out there with whatever they script for him and do bad comedy that isn't even funny. You'd think at some point he would put his foot down. But there's a lot of people who just don't like the guy. They want him to die, to get hurt, to go away, all these awful things, and it's terrible. I mean, it's an irrational hatred that people have for this man. And then there's a different set of fans who don't irrationally hate the guy. They're just bored of him. He's stale. He's been around. He's been on top for 10 years, 11 years now. And that's a more valid argument. You could say, okay, Cena needs to be phased down, kind of like he's been a little bit in this feud, because we've seen enough. But because people don't like the guy, at least the fans who were the most vocal at the buildings, is that hurting the Usos? Again, like I said, the Usos were doing just fine before they linked up with the guy. So I wonder if some of the reactions that they've been getting, because they still get good reactions, but I've noticed a smattering of boos, some places more than others. I've noticed that. I don't know if anybody else has, but I've noticed it. And I wonder if they're doing any harm to the Usos by associating him with a guy that people just don't like. Brad Maddox returned to Raw, only to be tombstoned by Kane and fired by Stephanie McMahon. It's like they finally realize what we've known for months, which is, oh shit, we have a Raw GM. We should probably, A, do something with him, or B, fire him. I'd rather they just not fill the role with somebody else, but I'm sure they will. You know, they just can't help themselves. So I'm sure either this week on TV or sometime in the next few weeks, who's going to be the new Raw GM, as if it matters. You know, maybe they'll plug a baby face in there this time just to make people happy. But, you know, a month from now, it's not going to matter. As long as Stephanie and Triple H are on the shows every single week, I mean, they call themselves the Authority. It's just comical that we need another authority figure on the show. It's like having, you know, Dixie and MVP and Power on Impact. What is the point? There is no point. Eva Marie wrestled her first singles match on Raw, and she won. She beat Summer Rae with what else? A distraction roll-up. After Fandango's music hit, he and Layla started swapping spit on stage. Summer was not happy about that. Why she wouldn't be happy about that, I don't know, because from these clips I see on YouTube from Total Divas, and they even showed one on Raw a few weeks ago, of her and Fandango smooching and everything. Meanwhile, there's a clip on YouTube that shows the exact same thing, and then she stops and says, I can't do this, it's like kissing my brother. So if it's like kissing your brother, then why are you so upset that Fandango is with Layla now? It's like, I don't even watch Total Divas, but if I did, I think that would drive me even more crazy. Because now it seems like they're not even following their own stories on that show. So why she would be so upset, I have no idea. The best part about this match here is that it went all of a minute. So Eva could not do anything offensive. There was nothing that she could fuck up in this match. And so they kept it short. They kept it brief. That's the way it should be whenever she's in there. She did nothing offensive. Unless you count the idea of her winning a match on Raw as offensive, which I would agree with you on. As if that wasn't embarrassing enough, having her out there. El Torito pinned Drew McIntyre and then had his tail ripped off by Hornswoggle. And Torito ran away, selling it like it was a real tail. And he was legitimately in pain. Consider that this is the same company that gave us NXT TakeOver 3 days later. And yet this is the show that NBC Universal is paying $200 million for. It's unbelievable to me. We also had Adam Rose wrestling Damian Sandow, dressed up as Davy Crockett. Fuck this show. Just fuck this show. I did not like this show, as you can tell. Emma pinned Alicia Fox, which makes sense, given that Alicia is the one getting the title match on the pay-per-view tonight. I guess they wanted another meltdown, and she only has meltdowns when she loses. This may have been her best one yet, actually, I have to say. She gave some dude at ringside a wedgie. And what makes it even better is that the dude was the Shockmaster's son. It came out after the show that the guy is Fred Ottman's kid. Fred Ottman was Typhoon, Tugboat, and the Shockmaster. The son of the Shockmaster getting a wedgie on TV just makes sense. It just does. So I kind of envy the guy, to be honest with you. Who wouldn't want to be wedgied by Alicia Fox? I think when she gave him the wedgie, too, she kind of straddled him. She was like dripping wet from soda that she poured all over herself. It's like we were watching this guy's, literally, his wet dream play out on live television. So I don't feel sorry for the guy at all. If anything, I'd like to go find him and shake his hand. Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio, my God, I never want to see this match on my TV ever again. How many matches have these guys had in the last year? Okay, and don't answer that because it's a rhetorical question. The correct answer is a shitload of matches. And they wonder why the fans don't react to anything when they see the same fucking matches over and over and over and over again, and they're not even good. Like Shield and the Wyatt family, they had about 4 matches, I think, right? 4 6-mans? And I didn't hear people really complaining, even when you got to match 3 or 4, because it was still cool. There was still a certain magic to it. I mean, it can never top those first 2 matches they had, the one at Elimination Chamber and the one on Raw in Chicago, and the crowd reactions. It was awesome. But you won't find too many people complaining if the Shield goes in there again and has a match with the Wyatts. The Shield and Evolution. I think the feud is kind of played out at this point, but I'm looking forward to their match because it's going to be a great match. Sheamus and Del Rio, way back when, in a galaxy far away when their feud first started, had some good matches, okay? That was a long-ass time ago. Del Rio is deader than dead. People don't care about Sheamus, which is why they need to turn him. But they send these guys out there, it seems like, every single week. And I know it's not every single week, but it feels that way. And it's not just Sheamus and Del Rio. We see the same thing. That's the problem when you have 3 hours to fill every single Monday night. You get the same matches over and over. Nobody wants to see the same matches over and over. They don't. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't plan to go off like that. It just pissed me off. Main event segment was the contract signing with Shield and Evolution. Shield came in the ring. They immediately threw out all the furniture. They said, let's get this over with. Sign the contract. Get your asses out here. Evolution came in. They teased bailing, but then they turned around. Big brawl broke out. And Evolution was the faction left standing at the end of the show. They gave Roman Reigns a triple powerbomb through the table, so they gave the Shield their own move. And so that builds more heat towards their elimination match at the pay-per-view tonight. No DQ. Triple H also used a sledgehammer on Roman Reigns here in this segment. So this was good, but overall the show was not. Just, we haven't had a really good Raw show, I think, in many weeks. I can't even remember the last really good Raw show we had. So they've got to wrap up these feuds at the pay-per-view, okay? Because this is the second month now that they're headlining with the same matches. Blow these things off. Blow them up or blow them off. But either way, be done with it and come up with some new stuff to give the fans. Okay? That's not my job. That's not your job. That's their job. They have people there who get paid very well, I'm sure, to be creative and come up with shit that people want to see. So hopefully they do that. And we'll see this, the start of some new feuds on Raw this Monday night. This is the show that I really wanted to talk about this week. A freaking awesome show. NXT TakeOver Thursday night on the WWE Network. Even better than Arrival in February. And Arrival was a kick-ass show, but this one I like more. I'm not sure which I enjoyed more, though. This or the Ring of Honor New Japan War of the Worlds show. And I was at that show. If you just ignore Raw and Impact, May was actually a pretty good month to be a wrestling fan. Had a clean sweep in my predictions, although it really wasn't a hard card to predict. That Sami Zayn-Tyler Breeze match was probably the one that could have gone either way. That match stole the show, but the women's match was nipping at its heels. It was a close call. They were both excellent matches. Charlotte and Natalya had a fantastic match, one of my favorite Divas matches in years. Natalya has now been part of two Match of the Year candidates in WWE, the match with Charlotte and her match with AJ. On Main Event a few months ago. Those two and the Paige Emma match from Arrival are three Divas matches I would put up against any that we've seen in the last decade. And they've all come in the first 5 months of this year. There's a lesson here. And I've talked about it here on this podcast before. That if you treat the Divas division like it matters and you give these women time to go out there and do what they do, people will get behind it. All three of those matches had time. All three of those matches had no less than 10 minutes, and in some cases, maybe closer to 20. This match on Thursday went 16, 17 minutes. They gave these girls 16 minutes on this show, which is unheard of for a Divas match in WWE. It's like somebody said on Twitter, I don't even think my Divas stopwatch goes that high. Even Ric Flair and Bret Hart at ringside, they played their roles well. Bret doesn't do much when he's down there, admittedly. He just kind of stands there and cheerleads a little bit. Flair was very entertaining. Of the two, clearly Flair blew Bret away in terms of his presence there at ringside. But I like the Hearts versus Flair's dynamic, you know, family pride. It added another layer to the story besides just, oh, I'm going to beat you for the title. Which leads me to the other lesson coming out of this show. A couple of weeks ago, we all know, Vince McMahon went from being a billionaire on paper to a millionaire. And again, string the violin for the guy. The man could buy and sell me 500 times over if he wanted to. But one of the reasons that happened is because they oversold how much more money they would be making in TV rights fees, okay, when their deal came up for expiration. And when they didn't get anywhere close to what they promised, Wall Street didn't take too kindly to the news, and the stock dropped like a rock. And one of the reasons that happened is because they tried to compare themselves to other sports, like NASCAR. All the money that those other real sports were getting in these different TV deals. And they thought they deserved the same thing, or something close. Okay, they were never going to get $800 million or whatever that ridiculous number that NASCAR is. And baseball and football, they get even more ridiculous numbers. It's out of control. So they weren't never, ever going to get anything like that, nor do I think they thought they were. But they thought they could kind of be in the same conversation. Okay, because they, hey, we've got 52 weeks a year of programming, live programming. We're DVR-proof. I think there are statistics out there that show most people will watch those shows live. Most people watch Raw live. There's very little DVR viewership. And so networks like that. They like live sports presentations. They don't want people to record shit on DVR and go back a week later and watch it. So that's what WWE was hoping for. The problem is, positioning themselves that way, people saw right through it. For years, they ran away from the sports label. We're entertainment. And then when they realized, oh shit, we can make more money if they think of us the way they do live sports, all of a sudden, their tune changed. That was a big mistake. Had they started to embrace the sports part of sports entertainment a little bit more, let's say 5 years ago, when UFC was still at the peak of its popularity, and they were kicking ass on pay-per-view, maybe by now people really would see them as something of a sports property. People don't see WWE as a sports property. Executives don't see them as a sports property. Okay, but maybe if they did, maybe the product would be better off for it. And we wouldn't see people having their tails ripped off on television. And Damian Sandow walking out there dressed up as Vanilla Ice one week. And Davy Crockett or Davy Richards or whatever the fuck he was dressed as on Monday night. You know, you look at the promo packages on this NXT TakeOver show. The stuff with the women, the package with Sami Zayn. That was something. You know, there was something different about them. They felt more sports-like, right? I'm sure I'm not the only one who felt that way. That's what I was thinking while I was watching it. There's something about it that reminded me of a sports presentation. The way they were speaking, Natalya and Charlotte and Sammy and all those people. You know, they felt more sports-like. And WWE always does great with their promo videos, but these were different. These were more different than anything that we've seen on Raw or on their pay-per-views. It felt real. It felt like a real competition. You know, it's funny. They call this the reality era. Yet there's very little reality to be found on their main shows. There's way more reality on the developmental show. Now, of course, I say that on the same show where we saw a dude in a bunny rabbit costume. But overall, this show felt more real than Raw has in ages. And the reaction to this show has been overwhelmingly positive, just based on emails I've gotten to my show. And go to any of the other wrestling sites and all the feedback and their mailbags and stuff. Everybody loved this show. People loved this show. Even the people who, for whatever reason, may not have loved it, they at least seem to like it. What does that tell you? Raw has been stagnant since WrestleMania. Impact has fallen off a frickin' cliff. You've got Willow and Dixie and all of that shit that nobody buys. There's something to be said for taking things a little more seriously. You can still have some goofy gimmicks and you can still have fun, but your main event matches, your main feuds, okay, your main storyline should never be used for comedy. They should give people a reason to care and kind of get involved and get what's that word JR loves to use? Invested. Get invested in it. And this developmental show here gets it right, more often than not. Why can't the other shows do the same thing? I watch a show like this and I wonder, why do we make such a big deal about when people are going to be called up to the main roster? It should be the other way around. Main roster guys should want to be called down to Florida. I mean, the money may not be as good, but it's way more fun when the crowds actually react to what they're seeing, which is more than I can say for WWE or TNA lately. I missed the pre-show because I had to work late, didn't make it home in time, but I did see the Fallout show afterwards, and it was awesome. It really was the Paul Heyman show, featuring Renee Young more than anything else. It made me long for the days of Heyman on commentary. You know, I'd say just sticking with Michael Cole on Monday nights, and the Raw commentary would probably improve about 500%. But Heyman is perfect in the role he's in now on TV. I wouldn't want to mess with that. So let's run through the card from start to finish here, shall we? We had Adam Rose open the show with a win over Camacho. The first thing I noticed is how much livelier and fun the crowd was than your typical crowd on Raw or SmackDown. This crowd at Full Sail in the first 5 minutes of this show was more alive than any Raw crowd in the past 3 weeks, maybe longer. Adam Rose did this entrance where he came off the party bus outside, and they filmed him and his party goers going from the outside of the NXT arena into the arena. And people ate this up. They loved it. You know, they were going crazy. And I've got to say, you know, I've lost whatever real interest I had in the Adam Rose character. I like the bunny. I'm a fan of the bunny. But Adam Rose just isn't doing it for me. I'm just waiting one of these days when he does that deal during his entrance where he falls backwards and they all catch him and surfboard him, or body surf him, I should say. I'm waiting for the day when he falls backwards and they just part the Red Sea and he just falls to the ground. One of these days it's going to happen. They're going to turn heel on the guy. So yeah, he beat Camacho, which ends that feud that I didn't really care about. It's one of the few things on NXT for the last month or so I really just did not care about. Camacho, you know, Camacho is he's the son of Haku, who was there watching. He's got size. He's got a good look to him. No real direction since they broke him and Hunico off when Hunico took over the Sin Cara character, which at this point he's probably better off just going to being Hunico, and they need tag teams. I really think they'd be better off just getting him out of that mask or having him pull double duty and bring back the Hunico Camacho team. We need more teams on NXT. We need more teams in WWE. And Camacho's got something. You know, he's got, like I said, he's kind of a big guy. He's in good shape. He's got a mean streak to him. He's just kind of lost right now. There's nothing about the guy to get really excited about. The Ascension defeated Kalisto and El Local to retain their NXT tag team titles. Poor Ricardo. Ricardo Rodriguez, of course, is the one under the El Local mask. What were they thinking, giving him the hot tag in this match? You know, other than they didn't want to beat Kalisto, so they had Ricardo take the losing fall, I guess that's the rationale behind it. But he was out of place in that spot, and then he botched that springboard off the ropes. Oh, man, I felt bad for the guy. Yeah, he's a weird one, Ricardo, because he's not fat, okay, like obese or anything like that. But he's also not light enough to really be flying around the ring like a luchador. So it just looks kind of clunky when he does it. And it looked clunky here. Not really a good match. The Ascension wins with the Fall of Man, so their reign continues. Then we had Tyler Breeze and Sami Zayn in a match to determine the number one contender for the NXT Championship. This is the match I was looking forward to the most. I polled you guys on Twitter before the show, asked you the same question, and overwhelmingly, you all agreed with me. You were looking forward to this match the most. You thought this match would steal the show, and it did, to no one's surprise. They gave new music to both guys. Sami Zayn's music is much better now than it was before. I wasn't really a fan of his music before. They gave him this ska, instrumental theme here now, so yeah, I'm kind of digging it. And then there's Tyler Breeze. Now, Tyler Breeze's theme music before was perfect. It was perfect for his entrance. It was perfect for his character. Apparently, though, it may have been production music that was not created by WWE. And when that happens, at some point, that music will change because they don't have the rights to it. It's not their own. And so they change it. I think that's probably what happened here. For years, that Hardy Boys theme, that instrumental theme they used for the Hardy Boys, is also production music. You know, that song and the music that was used for the Hollies, Hardcore Holly and Crash Holly, I hear that music all the time on bumpers and previews for other television shows. So, I don't know if that's the case here, but I take it as a good sign, though. I take it as a good sign for both these guys that they put the time and effort to give these guys new music. And not only did they give them new music, but for Tyler Breeze, they had him in studio recording a track for, you know, laying down lyrics for his own theme song, which tells me that they've got plans for the guy, because I don't think they would go through the expense and the hassle of doing that if they weren't planning on bringing him up soon and actually, pushing him and trying to make something out of the guy. So I think that's a positive sign. I was disappointed to hear that the old music was replaced by something new, but I have to say, listening to it ever since TakeOver, I'm digging it. I like it. I like the new theme song. The last time a WWE guy sang his own theme song about how good-looking he was, he became a Hall of Famer. Little guy you may know by the name of Shawn Michaels. I'm just saying. You know, and there's a lot of Shawn Michaels when he was younger that I see in Tyler Breeze. Triple H, too. I said that on the show a few weeks ago, that in terms of his appearance, the way he bumps, the hair, he reminds me of Triple H from 1995 when he first came over to WWE. So the match itself was awesome. It was just, it was a crazy match. Now, not crazy in that they did a whole bunch of, like, dangerous flips and all these insane moves like you know, we saw in the Ring of Honor New Japan show. I'm not comparing it to that. As a match on its own, it had a lot of action. It had crowd support. People were cheering Sami Zayn like crazy because he's the most over guy down there. Probably doesn't even need the title, in all honesty, to stay over. Although I wouldn't... I mean, if the plan is for him to stick around NXT a little bit longer, I don't know that him losing all of these matches will do him good. At some point, people will probably just go, all right, enough already with the losing. But he doesn't need to be the NXT champion. I mean, he's already over. He doesn't even need the belt. And people like Tyler Breeze as well. You know, he was booed on this show. A lot of times in the past, you know, these smart crowds down there, they'll cheer Breeze and they'll chant for him and stuff. We didn't really get that on this show. They kind of reacted the way that they should have here. And maybe it's just that they love Sammy so much and he's that likable and that over that by default, they booed the heel in this match. So they were totally into the match. They gave them time. The match itself was really good. We saw... Now, I didn't know the name of the move. I'm not claiming to know. I had to look it up. But people were going crazy when he used or attempted to use this move in the match, Sammy. This double pump handle orange crush bomb, I guess is what he called it on the indies when he would use it. He kind of used it on Tyler Breeze here. He botched it a little bit. It didn't quite come off the way it was supposed to, but he kind of saved it there at the end. Kind of the way, you know, if you remember the great 2 out of 3 falls match with Sami Zayn and Antonio Cesaro, where that phenomenal finish where Cesaro was supposed to propel him up into the air, and he almost dropped him, if you remember the end of that match. He almost dropped Zayn, but he's so freaking strong. You know, he regained his composure and then launched him about, you know, 6 feet in the air and killed him with that uppercut. That finish was so freaking great. So it was kind of a similar thing here. He saved it. It was fine. People didn't chant. They weren't, you know, disrespectful about it or anything. People are really into Sammy's offense. That, the Blue Thunder Bomb, all the stuff that he does. There were a couple of scary dives he took here in this match onto Tyler Breeze on the outside where I thought Tyler was concussed. I mean, the back of his head hit the steel grate. I thought he killed him, but somehow he survived. I love the match. I mean, plain and simple, I loved it. Tyler Breeze, he won in the end. Kind of a controversial finish where Sami Zayn went for his hell of a kick. I think they call it the Huluva kick is how they pronounce it, which is kind of clever, I guess. So he went for his Huluva kick there, and when he went for it, that Yakuza kick in the corner, I guess what happened is Breeze got his hands up to cover up and protect himself, but when he did, he basically nailed Sami in the junk. And the referee either didn't see it or didn't realize what had happened. And the question was, well, did Tyler Breeze do that on purpose? Or was he just protecting himself? That's kind of the question coming out of that. But from there, he nailed the beauty shot, which is his spinning heel kick. And he got the pin. And by the way, Tyler Breeze also used a hell of a, or maybe it's a Huluva, a super kick in this match, which, of course, as you can imagine on Twitter, was drawing a lot of Shawn Michaels comparisons. It might even be worthwhile to think about giving him that as his finisher at some point, because I don't know if people are going to buy into a spinning heel kick as a finish. I have no problem with it myself, but I could see where some people might. But that's how the match ended. Tyler Breeze got about as clean of a win as you could expect a heel like him to get. He didn't really cheat, although I guess that's kind of the story of the finish. Did he or didn't he? I always expect Sami Zayn to be great, but that was easily Tyler Breeze's best performance to date since he debuted. You guys know I've been singing this guy's praises from the moment he debuted that new character and went from being Mike Dalton to Tyler Breeze. I never saw much of his stuff as Dalton from when, you know, he was at the FCW days, but I was aware of him because I knew Lance Storm trained the guy, and Lance Storm's talked about it before, but I've loved the Breeze character from day one, and I've never wavered. You know, the guy's got something, so... He becomes the number one contender for the NXT title. That frees Sami Zayn up for a spot on the main roster. It goes back to what I said with my payback predictions earlier. If Cesaro beats Sheamus and wins the U.S. title, I'm fine with that, provided they bring Sami Zayn up and they do something with him and Cesaro, while Cesaro is still a heel. Heel Cesaro against babyface underdog Sami Zayn, I think is the way to go. You know, if they want to give him the spot, it's there for him, and I say give it to him. It's time, you know? Who else is left for him to feud with on this show, if not Adrian Neville? He's more than ready for the main roster, so it's not like he still needs seasoning, he's not quite there yet. You know, bullshit. He was there from day one. And he's adapted well to their style, but he was ready on day one. He's been losing matches left and right, like Bo Dallas. Like Bo Dallas did at the end of his, you know, of his little run on NXT before he made his debut on Raw and SmackDown. You know, the old territory mentality of doing the honors, losing on the way out. We had a segment with Rusev and Mojo Rawley, and I missed part of this. I stepped away for a moment, but I know that Mojo got laid out by Rusev. The first time, I guess, probably since he debuted, that Mojo really has been laid out like that by somebody. So I guess at some point we're going to get a match. I'm not sure why, because I don't think Rusev should not be losing matches on NXT, and Mojo Rawley has been kept pretty strong since he debuted. It'd be kind of surprising to me to put them in the ring and just have him tap out to the camel clutch. Charlotte and Natalya to determine the new NXT Women's Champion. Paige, of course, was forced to surrender the title, so they had this tournament over the last several weeks. Came down to these two ladies. And what can I say? They knocked it out of the park. I think I said it all before when I recap what happened here. They had a fantastic match. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, I selfishly want these women to stay on NXT and avoid the main roster like the plague, you know? Because there's no way that we're ever going to get a match like that on Raw or SmackDown, even on pay-per-view. I think they gave AJ and, what was her name? I already forgot her name. She left the company a few months ago. Anyway, when AJ won the title, I think it was a payback last year. That Divas match was like 10 minutes long. I remember it being very, very long. But that would be like the ceiling of what you could expect for a Divas match on pay-per-view. You'll never see one get 15 minutes, 17 minutes like this one did. And why should it? It's not like they build them up on TV to give people a reason to give a shit, and they end up putting them in the buffer spot. They put them in the death spot between the two main event matches. It's one of the reasons why I figured if they could actually build up their Divas division and bring back a Minis division, the Minis are a fun, stupid little distraction, they put them in the buffer spot. And give the women a more, you know, more respectable spot on the card. Put them second from the top. Let them open the show. Why not? You put them in the death spot all the time, people aren't going to care. But this was great. They had Flair and Bret out there with them. There was a little bit of wonky psychology here on a figure four leg lock. You know, Charlotte was using the move on Natalya. And it was the sequence where Natalya was rolling to get over to the ropes, but then they would roll back and forth. And I was watching this, and I was watching their expressions. And it looked like, you know, Natty was kind of applying the pressure all of a sudden to Charlotte. But Charlotte wasn't really selling any pain from it because, as far as I could tell, she was the one that had the move locked on Natalya. But it looked like Natalya now had reversed it, but she really didn't. It was very weird. So I think the psychology on the figure four just left me confused. And I don't think I was the only one. That's really the only criticism I can levy against this match. Charlotte wins with her bow down to the queen, cutter move, gets the pin. New Divas or Women's Champion, I should say. Of course, Natty cried. You know, what else is new? Charlotte cried. Really emotional scene. Ric Flair cried. You know, I joke here about Natty crying. I mean, Ric Flair stubs his toe, and he's got tears and blood probably mixed together rolling down his face. So he's crying. Brett was the only one who wasn't. Brett's just kind of standing there like, okay, you know. I don't want to say, like, he didn't want to be there. I'm sure, you know, he loves going down there to support his niece, I guess it would be. Yeah, I guess it would be his niece. But yeah, Brett doesn't really show a whole lot of emotion. I don't know if that's because of the stroke or just because Brett doesn't really, you know, he doesn't care. But yeah, he's just kind of standing there, and he shook Flair's hand. I know the two of them probably don't really like each other, but they showed respect to each other. And it was nice. It was a very, very nice scene, nice emotional scene at the end there. And it drove home the point, man, that this was a big deal. It was a big deal to both of these women. And you should care, because they do. Because that's how much it means to them. So I like that. I like that aspect. Everything about this just reminded me of a sports-like presentation. I said it before, you know, the promo packages beforehand, the match they had, the post-match stuff, even though Charlotte is a heel, you know, she broke down and they embraced, and it was this the show of sportsmanship, I guess, you know, between the two of them, and it was great. It was great. Everything about this was great. It was a cool moment for Flair to see his daughter win her first championship, and I loved everything about this. Main event was Adrian Neville and Tyson Kidd. Had a lot of expectations riding on their shoulders. These two guys going in there having a match, you would think it was match of the year. It wasn't match of the year. It was very good, but not quite up to the expectations I think that people may have set for it. And in that respect, it's very similar to the match Adrian Neville had with Bo Dallas on the Arrival special in February. They had a ladder match. First ever NXT ladder match. Adrian Neville on top of a ladder. You know, hey, how bad could it be? And they had a really good match, but I never thought that match was great. This match wasn't great, but it was really good. And Tyson Kidd looked good in there, and Adrian Neville won with the red arrow, went for the handshake. I thought we were going to have a Bret Hart, Bob Backlund moment where Tyson just slapped the freaking shit out of him, but instead he just no-sold and walked away. Never shook his hand. He got booed. Even the post-show, when they were interviewing people and they had Natty out there, they brought Tyson Kidd out there. He walked right past his wife, didn't even really acknowledge her. He was in a foul mood, didn't really say much, and then bailed. So they're either turning him heel, or I've seen rumors, you know, reports online that they may put him under a mask because they feel like the Tyson Kidd character has gone about as far as it could go. They're never going to push the guy on TV. We know that. But even now on NXT, you know, he got a title match and he lost. He's gone as far as he can go. Where does he go from here? Heel Tyson Kidd or maybe some masked gimmick might be the way to go. And that was NXT TakeOver, a fantastic show. If you are not a subscriber to the network, but you can, I don't know what you're waiting for. I mean, this show alone is worth the $10 that they charge for it. If you live out of the country and you don't have access to the network, I know there are ways around it, but if you don't have access to the network, it's too bad. It really is too bad. And hopefully at some point you will be able to go back and watch this because it was well worth the 2 hours I spent on it. And, you know, the thing with NXT is the future really is bright down there. They've got a lot of talented guys down there. We saw a lot of them on the special, Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Tyler Breeze, among others, and even the women. Charlotte, look at the way Charlotte's improved. She hasn't been doing this for that long. And she's getting better and better every week. They've got Bayley, they've got Sasha Banks, who's actually pretty good. A lot of really talented people down there. But then you also have to keep in mind that they've got, reportedly, nothing's confirmed yet, but they've got some pretty talented guys that by the end of this summer may all be in NXT at the same time. And I'm talking about Kenta from Pro Wrestling Noah, Prince Devitt from New Japan, and Kevin Steen. It sounds like if all goes well with visa work and blood work and medicals and all that kind of stuff, all three of those guys may well end up in NXT at the same time by the end of the summer. Think about that. Kenta, Kevin Steen, Prince Devitt, plus guys like Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn if he's still on the NXT roster, Solomon Crowe has yet to debut. They get Enzo Amore back from his leg injury, you know, with Colin Cassidy. I think we're in for a real treat with this roster 6 months from now. You know, I think things are going to get even more fun in the months to come with NXT. So now would be a good time if you're not watching or you're not watching every week and you listen to these reports. Now would be a good time to start watching NXT, start learning about some of these guys and learning the names, because these are the guys that are going to be on that main roster very soon. You know, you see, look at the main roster now. Look at how it's changing. All the NXT talent or people that were filtered through that NXT system who are now coming up to the main roster. At some point, Triple H has said this, but at some point it's true. Their goal is to have that roster just about completely dominated by NXT guys. And it's going to happen at some point. And it's really fun to watch these guys progress, the guys who maybe aren't as polished. And then they start bringing in guys from all over the world, like the guys I just mentioned, and they're all in the same place at the same time. That could be a lot of fun. I did not have time to watch Impact this week, so there will be no TNA report. I hope at some point maybe I can hop on their YouTube channel. I know they put the segments up there. I could check out some of what happened, but I have no idea what happened. I didn't see the show. Quite frankly, I probably am better off not watching that show this week, coming off that hard show from last week that I quit halfway through on. And by the way, just to go back to that show, not to belabor the point, but guess which segment chased away over 150,000 viewers? That was the show that I watched that I stopped halfway through. Guess which segment it was? The same one that caused me to turn off the show early. The delusional Dixie segment where she confronted Bully Ray. And the stuff with MVP and all the other stuff. I tuned out after that, and apparently so did a whole bunch of other people. I wasn't the only one. The only TNA note here that I have before we move on, and this could have some ramifications on their Slammiversary pay-per-view, which is coming up in 2 weeks, is that apparently MVP suffered some sort of knee injury. I think it was at a Preston City Wrestling independent show this past weekend. Don't know what the injury is. Apparently he came out the next night on crutches, couldn't wrestle, said that there were some tests done that were inconclusive. He's going to have to fly back home and have an MRI done. So that could be a serious blow to TNA if his knee is really messed up that badly and he can't go. He's in the main event of their pay-per-view. He's wrestling Eric Young for the championship. So that'll be a story to follow. But aside from that, just didn't have time to watch Impact. I'm not giving up on it yet. I will hopefully be back to the normal Impact report next week. Just didn't have time to do so this week. Let's move on to the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can send them to me. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. You could also send audio questions in MP3 format. Just record, 30 seconds or so, record your question, and email it on over as an attachment. This comes from Cliff. This was a quote from Magnus that I found on SEScoops.com. He said that Magnus said, "On average, numbers went across the board while I had the strap. The job of the heel champion is to get the baby faces over and leave the place in a better state than he found it. Mission accomplished. I can't wait to sink my teeth into my next chapter." So Cliff wants to know, did Dixie spread her delusional dust on Magnus? I like that. Delusional Dixie dust. This was from a column that Magnus wrote recently for Fighting Spirit magazine in the UK. I think he does a monthly column for them. Yeah, he goes off on wrestling writers in this column that Cliff pointed at. He calls them parasites, talks about how WWE and TNA both have to work to crack down on people who leak information. I guess he got all pissy because a promoter asked him if he had any heat with John Gaborik, who handles creative for TNA, and Magnus said it wasn't true. I never heard that. I don't know where that came from, but his other comments are what confirm my suspicions about mental illness running rampant in TNA. Sam Shaw's locked up in an insane asylum, an actual insane asylum on TV. Jeff Hardy's running around as his alter ego. Now poor Magnus has lost his mind. First, let's address what he says here. He says numbers went across the board when I had the strap. It sounds like there's a word missing there, Does he mean numbers went up? Numbers went across the board. What does that mean? They went across the board. If he means down into a black hole, then yes. Ratings went up a little bit those first few weeks after he won the strap, as he calls it. But TNA ratings were up slightly anyway because football season was over. And they were giving away pay-per-view matches on free TV. You had Magnus against AJ, champion against champion. Remember that whole thing? That was at the beginning of the year. We had Magnus against Sting. So obviously their ratings are going to see an uptick when you give away matches like that for free. What about all the other numbers? What about the live event attendance? What about pay-per-view numbers? You really want to take credit for that, dude? It's not like it's his fault. He was booked like a pussy. You ever wonder what an actual pussy might look like with a strap around it? That was Magnus. The job of the heel champion is to get the baby faces over and leave the place in a better state than he found it. Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Is this guy for real? Is this a parody column? What baby faces did Magnus get over as champion? Name one. Name one baby face he helped get over as champion. Leave the place in a better state than he found it. Okay, Officer Barb Brady, whatever you say. Seriously, that's some of the best comedy I've read in a while. WWE should hire Magnus to write their comedy segments for them. Magnus should write for John Cena. Leave the place in a better state than he found it. TNA is hanging by a thread. Ratings apparently went up so much with Magnus as champion that Spike TV still hasn't signed them to a new contract. A lemonade stand gets more foot traffic than most TNA house shows. And he left them in a better place than they were in before. You can't teach stupid. It just comes naturally. Got a question here from Mad Max from San Leandro, California. I was watching this week's WWE Countdown on the network. This week was Top 10 Factions. It started out good with the Heenan Family, Hart Foundation, Evolution, etc. Then it got to the final four. At four was the Four Horsemen. At three was the NWO. You would think either of these factions would be number one or two. What got number two? The Brood. I thought this was a terrible placement on the list, let alone among the top 10. The Brood, in my opinion, is one of the most overrated factions in history. They did have an awesome presentation. one of the most iconic themes and a cool entrance. However, if you delve deeper, they were not that great. Gangrel did not have promo skills, and while Edge and Christian did, the lines they had to deliver were god-awful. Stuff like, the fury of the brood will rage forever. Well, I mean, what did you expect? You know, Shakespeare? Many argue that the Brood were stars in the Attitude Era. However, it was a time where most of the roster were stars. Another argument is that it made Edge and Christian. I believe that Edge and Christian were made after the amazing tag team ladder match with the Hardy Boys at No Mercy. Lastly, the Brood never really had a memorable moment other than bloodbaths. Not any memorable matches that I can recall. So, what is your opinion of the Brood? Well, not as harsh as yours. I don't look at the Brood as any sort of embarrassment or anything. I thought the Brood was a cool little faction, and I figured they never had big plans for Gangrel. They probably just put Edge and Christian, more so Edge, with them to help Edge get better. You know, to work alongside those guys and kind of up his game and have something to do. And it worked, because people still remember the Brood. The Brood was one of those pieces of the Attitude Era that people, I think, have fond memories of. Like you said, dude, I mean, you admitted it. Cool presentation, cool entrance music. There was a lot of stuff to like about the Brood. But yeah, I mean, putting them... Look, number two of all time, of course not. I don't take any of that seriously. Those lists that they put together, they do that on purpose. They do it because they want people to get all upset and have a debate on social media, and it becomes a talking point, or it starts trending or whatever. They do it on purpose, dude. Don't let it get to you. Obviously, the Brood is not in the top three or the top five. Maybe not even the top 10 of factions all time. It's their stupid list. Your list is going to look different than my list, who's going to look different from the next person's list. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape about that. I agree, though. That tag team ladder match with the Hardys and No Mercy is the match that I think launched Edge and Christian as something more than just, you know, the Brood tag team. They really broke out of the pack after that. And after that is when they started to really get their success in WWE. You know, WrestleMania, they won that tag team ladder match, the triangle ladder match, and then I think they won TLC 2 at WrestleMania the following year. And they started the whole 5-second pose routine, and they really started going places. So I like the Brood personally. Did they have memorable matches? Aside from the one I just mentioned with the Hardys, no, they didn't. But I think, again, it was more to help Edge and Christian, and more so Edge, kind of find his footing. And you could find examples of that littered in WWE history, where they'll take guys, young guys, who they have big plans for, but they stick them in a faction first, because they feel it helps them, working with those guys or traveling on the road, like they did with Orton and Batista. But, you know, Orton and Evolution... Orton was nobody. They saw something in him. Triple H wanted these two guys to be his little pet project, so they took him under their wing, and they traveled with them and worked together, and it launched Orton to a different level. Now, when he got dumped from Evolution, he got buried 6 feet under by losing the belt, you know, a few weeks later back to Triple H. And then the plans they had for him at WrestleMania that year never came to fruition. Batista got the spot instead, because he got over unexpectedly. So Orton we talk about overuse of the word buried. It really was a burial of Orton. Even if that wasn't their intent, you know, the circumstances just were what they were. Batista got hot. Orton was doing at the time was, if I remember correctly, he was doing a concussion storyline where he was constantly getting concussed and he had this glazed over look on his face. And, you know, he got beat about a million times by Triple H. I think Triple H beat him again with that same concussion finish at the Royal Rumble. So things didn't work out too well there for Orton. But I think long term, Orton certainly is, you know, a big star now, and he'll be a Hall of Famer one day. He's had like 9 or 10 world titles, I think, at this point. And Edge also went on to have a great career for himself. Edge also 11-time world champion. He's in the Hall of Fame. I think things worked out pretty well. But I don't think they ever had big plans for Gangrel. And even Christian. Christian only got the belt because Edge retired. You know, we all know the stories of what Vince McMahon really thinks of Christian. He never looked at him as a main event guy. And you look at the way he's been booked over the years, and it's pretty obvious that's how he feels about the guy. Christian probably overachieved, if anything. I don't know that anybody expected him to get the world title at some point, but he did. Nick from Mobile, Alabama, what are your thoughts on Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth being inducted into the Hall of Fame the same year? Would you think it to be disrespectful? I don't see what would be disrespectful about it at all. Quite the opposite. I think they deserve to go in together. They're so tightly linked. I know they got a divorce and everything, but they're so tightly linked as a package. I think when that day comes, they should go in together. Joseph from Connecticut, I just recently started reading Brock Lesnar's book, and it talks about how he likes his privacy and staying out of the media, but he seems like a simple, cool guy. Do you think if one day an ill kid had a wish to WWE, I guess he's talking about Make-A-Wish, and it was to meet Brock, do you think he would do it? Well, how do you know he hasn't done it already? Not everybody who does Make-A-Wish publicizes it. You know, John Cena apparently didn't want it publicized, but WWE chose a different path, so all we ever hear about is all the great Make-A-Wish stuff that John Cena does, but we probably don't hear about a bunch of other guys in that company who do the same thing. How do we know Brock hasn't done it? I mean, I can't see Brock Lesnar getting a request. I would imagine he doesn't get very many of them, but if he was to, I can't imagine Brock Lesnar gets a request to meet a Make-A-Wish kid and says, fuck off. You can say a lot of things about Brock Lesnar. I don't know him personally, but I would be stunned if I ever found out he did something like that, or anybody on the roster, really. I can't imagine that any of those guys would ever say, no, I will not meet that kid. So yes, I do think he would meet them. Letago Modiba from England. I was searching up the Fall Brawl pay-per-views on Wikipedia, and under the dates and venues, I see Fall Brawl listed for 2015. I click on it, it takes me further down the page, and I see the promotion is World Wrestling Entertainment. Do you think Fall Brawl will return as a WWE pay-per-view? And do you want any more WCW pay-per-views to return? I don't know if there's anything to that or not. I haven't checked it out. Maybe other people can look into that. It's possible. You know, they're doing a lot of WCW stuff in terms of DVD content because it's sold really well. The Goldberg DVD, I think, has been their top-selling DVD of the year. And so it wouldn't shock me if they wanted to bring back an old WCW name. I'd love for them to bring back an old concept called War Games, but that's not going to happen. You know what, though? Fall Brawl is not the name I would bring back. Of all the WCW pay-per-view names, Fall Brawl would not be at the top of my list. I would love for them to bring back Halloween Havoc and do a show that has a Halloween theme. I'm not saying that everybody on the show dresses up like a goofball, you know, but if you have the Halloween set, like, they don't really put any effort into their sets anymore for any show not named WrestleMania. And I think that sucks. And I'm sure it's part of cost-cutting and whatever. But it also takes away from the special nature of the pay-per-views. I'm not saying that's the reason people don't buy their shows, because that's a ridiculous answer. But maybe one of the reasons that people just don't look at them as anything special anymore is because they all look the same. They don't put any effort into the fancy sets anymore. So why not hang some ghouls and goblins and put some tombstones on the floor and do it up, you know, the right way, and maybe have the announcers out there dressed like idiots because they act like idiots every week on TV anyway. So wouldn't be much of a stretch, really. And just have a show called Halloween Havoc. I always thought that was a cool name. I always thought Bash at the Beach, you know, was another cool name. Starcade. Fall Brawl would not be at the top of my list, though. Blair Henderson from, I'm going to say Ayr, Scotland. He says it's the hometown of Drew McIntyre. It's either Ayr or Ayr. I'm going to say Ayr, Scotland. Hopefully that's right. Been listening for about 4 months now. This is my first question, though. Just caught a little bit of Superstars and noticed that they use the show nowhere close to its potential. They show at least two matches from Raw every single week and show pretty long highlights of the other matches. Do you think shows like Superstars and Main Event would be more successful if they ran their own storylines and appeared independent from Raw and SmackDown? Albeit the Superstar show won't be as high caliber, but it would give them a chance to get over on the show with their characters as opposed to just pointless matches every single week. No, because the whole purpose of the secondary shows is just to boost viewership for the main shows. You know, the only thing that really matters at the end of the day to WWE is Raw and SmackDown. Main Event, less so. It is on the network, so they want to use that as a draw. And that's the other aspect of it. They want to use this live main event every Tuesday night to help draw people into the network by putting people on the show that you would see on Raw and SmackDown. So whatever happens on a Monday, they can say, hey, you know, tomorrow night, live on the network on main event, it's going to be so-and-so in a rematch against this person, and we'll put a U.S. title match on or an Intercontinental title match on. That's why main event is used. Superstars, I mean, it is what it is. It's a waste. But the emphasis is on the main shows, as it should be. We have another show with storylines already that are independent from Raw and SmackDown. It's called NXT. You don't need Main Event and Superstars. Trust me. Just watch NXT every week, and you'll be fine. Doug in Ohio, if Spike were to part ways with TNA, what would you think if they picked up Ring of Honor? I am not sure where they are on, but they are on Saturday evenings on my local Fox affiliate, and I, along with a lot of my friends who are wrestling fans, have given up on TNA and have really embraced ROH. What do you think? I don't even know if that would be possible. Ring of Honor is 100% owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, which has their own stations. So the idea that this company that is owned and operated by Sinclair would negotiate to put their show on Spike, which I think is owned by Viacom, which I'm guessing is a competitor to Sinclair, unless I've got my media conglomerates all mixed up here, to me that just wouldn't make any sense. So I think the likelihood of that is slim to none. I'd love to see it. Not necessarily that TNA just goes away, although, again, they haven't given me much hope lately. But if Ring of Honor could find a slot on an actual cable station, whether it's Spike or FX or something else, I think that would be great. And maybe I would be more open to watching it every week, too. You know, I'm with you in that boat. But I just, the idea of them going to Spike, though, given who owns them now, I don't know how realistic that is. Just, I don't think it would make sense. This comes from Albert. If WWE is worried that if John Cena loses clean, it will mess up merchandise sales and TV ratings will drop, according to WWE. My thing is, not all but most of those people that Cena has worked with has benefited Cena and not the other wrestler. It's like they are protecting him, and WWE has given Cena this golden shovel. Oh, come on, dude. If this is the case, then has WWE been going with the wrong person the whole time? I say this because The Rock wasn't protected like Cena was, nor was Shawn Michaels or Eddie Guerrero, etc. Well, I wouldn't say that Shawn Michaels wasn't protected by WWE. I mean, he got plenty of preferential treatment back in the day, but that's beside the point. He said that they would lose clean and put guys over without the excuses or a golden shovel crap, and they still got over and TV ratings were okay. So, has WWE been going with the wrong person the whole time? Well, I'll tell you what, you know, based on the money they've made off the guy, I certainly don't think so. The money he's made, the time commitments that he makes to the company, all the PR stuff and the charity stuff that he does that they can then go out and publicize to make themselves look good, all the money off merchandise, you know, when he's off the show, ratings do drop a little bit. So he actually is a ratings draw. He's not a ratings draw like Steve Austin was a ratings draw, but he's the biggest ratings draw they have now, believe it or not, even despite how overexposed the guy is. So now, seems to me like they probably made the right choice, given how much money they've made off the guy, and how much worse off they would be if something happened to him and he wasn't around. They obviously looked at the landscape back then and didn't see anybody else who had the kind of appeal and the kind of potential to make as much money for them as Cena has. So it seems to me like they made the right call. It's just in terms of the way they booked him and the way they script the dude sometimes, they do him no favors. You know, they kind of shoot him in the foot and then tell him to go run a marathon. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. But I don't see anything wrong with picking him to be the guy when they did back in 05 or whatever it was. I think they've made quite a bit of money off the guy's back. And would make more money if they just pushed other people the way they've pushed him. It's not because of John Cena other people have been held down. It's because they just have the inability to create new stars because they're terrified of beating the guy or, you know, phasing him out too much, not featuring him enough. It's like they're scared. I just wish they weren't so scared, you know, and they were more open. They had a more open mind. They were more open to taking risks and giving other people the same level of exposure and giving Cena maybe some time away. You know, whether it's a few weeks here and there, a couple months, you know, whatever the case may be. Take the short-term hit if ratings go down a little bit and maybe your next pay-per-view doesn't do quite as well. Take the short-term hit for long-term gain. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say that. I don't, you know, look at their books and all the specifics of their finances and everything else, but You, at some point, you've got to put the same level of effort into other guys that you've put in with this one guy. And I don't know how much of that is really seen as fault. So there is that consideration. Some people don't want to hear that because they just don't like the guy, and that's fine. And finally, Ramey from Morocco. Regarding the Shield vs. Evolution match at Payback, WWE seems to not have thought it through. Since it's a no-holds-barred elimination match, what's keeping the ones who have been eliminated from interfering? I know that in the end it all comes down to who's getting pinned last, but it seems rather pointless combining these two stipulations together. What do you think? That's actually a really good point. I had not thought about that, but it's true. Let's say if, you know, Batista is the first one eliminated in the match, who's going to be there to tell him he has to go back to the locker room? He can just stay out there. He can stay in the ring if he wants to and keep wrestling like he's in the match. Technically, there's nothing stopping them from breaking the rules since it's no DQ. So I think you actually make a really valid point there. I think they wanted a situation where we did this match once. It was great, but if we're going to do it again, it has to be different. They probably could have just gotten away making it no DQ, and that's it. And then they can bring in the sledgehammers and the chairs and the plunder and all that kind of stuff. But you make a good point. Technically, unless they announce something on the show, like if you don't go back to the locker room, you're going to be fired or something like that, which again is goofy because the COO of the company is in the freaking match. What's he going to do, fire himself? So there really is no other authority there that's there to tell these guys, hey, you got to leave the ringside area. They could just stay out there and do whatever the hell they want to.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, we go back 27 years ago to May 26, 1987. Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik, who were locked in a bitter feud on WWE television at the time, were arrested by New Jersey State Police during a routine traffic stop. They were pulled over. Duggan admitted to smoking some marijuana, but the cops also found Sheiky Baby in possession of cocaine, for which he was charged, and which Duggan pleaded ignorance about. He told the cops he had no idea that Sheik had cocaine on him. This was a PR nightmare for WWE back then because kayfabe was still alive and well. And the idea that, you know, this American hero, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, would be traveling in the same car with the, you know, Iranian villain at the time, the Iron Sheik, who he was feuding with, that was a big deal. And they tried, you know, months later, Sheik tried to claim that he didn't have a valid U.S. driver's license, so WWE forced him to travel with Duggan, and that's the only reason they were together, and he hated him, and he tried to keep kayfabe, but it was ridiculous. Duggan got suspended, Sheik got fired over it, and Duggan ended up being brought back months later. He even won the first Royal Rumble the following year. But I've heard that in his book, he talks about this. He claims, you know, Duggan does, that he never got back that same momentum he had before the arrest. They just used him as a mid-card guy when he would have been WWE champion or Intercontinental champion or maybe a tag team champion. I know it sounds ridiculous on the surface, but I would not outright dismiss the notion that Duggan never would have been WWE champion. He was a huge star in Mid-South before he came over to WWE, and this incident happened not long after he debuted there, only a matter of months. He had already been headlining some shows, some house shows, in matches against Andre the Giant. So for a while there, they trusted him in that top babyface position to headline those shows that Hogan wasn't on. Had his push continued, uninterrupted, and he got over with the fans, and maybe if they didn't push him like a frickin' Eugene clone with his tongue sticking out like a moron, who's to say that when Hogan leaves the following year to go make No Holds Barred and they need somebody to put the title on, that Duggan wouldn't have been that guy? Or that Duggan would have been the guy to feud with, let's say, Ted DiBiase through much of 1988? Had they stuck to the original plan, which was for DiBiase to win the belt at WrestleMania 4. Him and DiBiase had a classic feud in Mid-South. It's on that Mid-South DVD that WWE put out. They had one of the all-time great matches there. It was, I think it was a steel cage, tuxedo, coal miner's glove match. Something ridiculous. But it's actually a really good match, and it's on the DVD. So they had that history together of working together, and they, you know, plenty of times before. They only went with Savage winning at WrestleMania 4 because Honky Tonk Man refused to drop the Intercontinental title to him the month before WrestleMania. Had he done so, Savage would have been the Intercontinental Champion when WrestleMania rolled around. He wouldn't have been wrestling for the WWE title. So the idea of Duggan either being the champion or being the number one contender to feud with DiBiase through the summer is not such a wacky idea. 18 years ago this week, on May 27th, 1996, Scott Hall makes a very memorable debut on WCW Monday Nitro, walking out in the middle of a Mike Enos match. I forgot who he was wrestling. But Hall came out of the crowd, he grabbed a microphone, and cut a promo that made it sound a lot like he was an invader from the WWF. And then later in the show, he came back, he confronted Eric Bischoff and said, you want a war, you've got one. He made references to the Nacho Man and the Huckster and Billionaire Ted. It was really well done, very believable, and it launched WCW to the stratosphere. You know, it launched the Monday Night War, because Scott Hall came by that night, and he declared war on WCW. A couple weeks later, Kevin Nash made his debut. Hogan eventually turned heel. They formed the NWO, and after that, it was off to the races. But I think that debut has to go down. I can't sit here and say the definitive number one debut of any wrestler in any of the major companies ever. It could be, but if it's not number one, it's in that top three. When you consider what came from it and what that moment meant to wrestling in the late 90s, what it would end up meaning, it was huge. And the way it was done, it was perfection. Perfection. I give Eric Bischoff a lot of credit for that. It was one of the few genius moves that they made in WCW at that time. And WWF really wasn't doing anything overly exciting, and yet here on this other program, which is still relatively new, I mean, Nitro was only around from September the previous year, and they were going back and forth even at that point. I think they were winning some weeks, but, you know, for the most part, WWF was still number one. And that's all it's almost like the switch got flipped. And people saw something on that other show, was like, wait a minute, is this really happening? Is this real? I mean, are we finally going to get a WWF against a WCW card, or, you know, what's going to happen here? It got people genuinely excited. It got people talking. And I could just vouch for myself, you know, back when I was still in school back then, everybody at school was talking about it, even the people who were just casual fans at best, and they didn't think wrestling was cool. You know, they would never cop to having watched wrestling. All of a sudden, they were talking about all this stuff that was going on Nitro, and it's like, well, dude, I thought you didn't watch wrestling. Oh, yeah, well, I don't, but did you hear about what happened? And, you know, of course, they were full of shit. They were watching every single week. So that was a big, big moment in wrestling history. That was 18 years ago. Wow, God, it feels like a lifetime. Also 18 years ago this week, we'll end with this, May 28, 1996. And this was the day after Scott Hall debuted on Nitro. It was Beware of Dog, Night 2. And the backstory to this, WWE had an in-your-house pay-per-view subtitled Beware of Dog. The Sunday before, and there was a massive storm. So I think it was like a massive rainstorm, and it knocked out one of their satellites. So I remember watching the pay-per-view, and the first match, I believe, was Triple H against Mark Merrill. And the match that was coming up next was a Caribbean strap match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Savio Vega. Well, as Vega's on his way down to the ring, the satellite kind of breaks up, and it goes dead. And we get a blue screen, not unlike the blue screen of death that Windows users know all too well. And if you are a Windows user, you know exactly what the blue screen of death is. If you're a Mac user, piss off. The only other match that aired that night on pay-per-view once the satellite came back on was the main event. So we went from the opener to the main event, which was Triple H in main events in 96. Shawn Michaels against the British Bulldog for the title. And they had a storyline going at the time where Diana Hart, the Bulldog's wife, had claimed that Shawn sexually harassed her. He denied it. It was this big thing concocted by Jim Cornette. Anyway, the match ended in a no contest because the Bulldog got German suplexed by Shawn. There had been a ref bump before that, so there were two refs at ringside, and each ref had a different vantage point as the pinfall was happening, and they counted the fall. One ref counted it for the Bulldog, one ref counted it for Shawn, but technically both of their shoulders were down. So there was a big controversy, and they said, you know, it's a draw. In the event of a draw, the title stays with the champion, so Shawn kept the belt. From what I had read in more recent years, going back in the old newsletters like Torch and the Observer and stuff, is that those guys knew they had a crappy match. I have not seen the match in a while. I'd have to go back and check it out. I know they've had better matches, but apparently Shawn in particular was just incensed. They just did not have, I guess, a great match that night, and everything that was going on with the blackout, I'm sure people's nerves were very high that night. So what happened is, they made good to the fans who ordered the pay-per-view, who got screwed a couple nights earlier. And on this night, May 28th, they aired another pay-per-view called Beware of Dog 2. So it was comprised of all three matches that did not air on television. And I think the only outcome that changed was in the Yokozuna vs. Vader match. Yokozuna won the dark match, literally a dark match, at the original show. And Vader won the match that actually aired on TV. They also redid Savio Vega versus Steve Austin. And the thing about that, all those matches that did not air on the original pay-per-view, they still happen live in the building. So in the dark, these guys had a strap match. And in the dark, Yokozuna had a match with Vader. And Undertaker, I believe, wrestled Goldust. So the matches did happen, but they happened in total darkness, and they redid them in the light, of course, a couple nights later for all of us to watch. So in the strap match between Savio Vegas and Steve Austin, Vegas. Actually, that would be a bad gimmick, Savio Vegas. I don't know where that came from. Savio Vega and Steve Austin had a Caribbean strap match, and the stipulation was that if Austin won, Vega would have to become Ted DiBiase's chauffeur. Okay, that was the stipulation for the original strap match. DiBiase was managing Austin at the time. And if Vega won in the rematch, DiBiase said he would leave WWE. So they added that little stipulation in, I think, on Raw the next night. Now, DiBiase was on his way to WCW anyway. So, of course, Vega won. DiBiase was gone. And this is one of the more underrated pay-per-view matches I've ever seen on a WWE show. I mean, this was an excellent match. It's hard to do a good strap match. I can't think of very many really good strap matches. In the finish, it's always the same. But these guys whipped the holy shit out of one another and ended up having one hell of a pro wrestling match. It was just great stuff. Seek it out on the network. See, now that we have this network, all the pay-per-views are archived. You can go back and watch. I actually checked it out the other day after I was coming up with the This Week in History notes here. And I watched part of it. I wanted to see how they handled it because it was technically two separate shows. So were they going to air, the two matches and then put a note up about what happened and splice in the other matches? From what I saw, they basically spliced the two together. But they aired the Mero Triple H match and they went right into the Shawn Bulldog match. And then they went right into the intro for the second pay-per-view. So if you don't know the backstory to this, and you're a subscriber to the network, and you pick out Beware of Dog, it's going to look awfully weird. Plus, the commentary teams change, because Jim Ross, I think, was on commentary for that second show. The first one was Vince and Jerry Lawler. But yeah, seek it out on the network, absolutely. You have no reason not to check it out. It's definitely worth going out of your way to watch if you've never seen it before. Goldust also beat Undertaker in a casket match for the Intercontinental title. When Mankind popped out of the casket at ringside, put Undertaker down with the Mandible Claw. That second show that they did on the 28th also doubled as a Superstars taping. They already had that schedule. They were taping a whole bunch of matches for several weeks worth of Superstars. And it was a pretty noteworthy show. It featured Triple H giving Marty Garner the scariest looking pedigree I've ever seen in all my life. It looked like Garner's fault. Like, he thought Triple H was going for a suplex or something, if you go back and watch it. He somehow ended up upside down, on the receiving end of this pedigree, and he got spiked right down on his head. He basically got spiked pile-driven into the mat. How he didn't break his neck and end up in a wheelchair is a mystery to me. You can find it on YouTube. You just type in Triple H Marty Garner pedigree. You're going to get a whole bunch of clips. Also on this taping, Steve Austin beat Jason Arndt in a squash using the Stone Cold Stunner for the very first time. Arndt later became part of Shane McMahon's Mean Street Posse as Joey Abs, little trivia note. This was an important night in the career of Steve Austin, if you really think about it. First, he lost DiBiase as his mouthpiece on the pay-per-view, okay, when he lost the strap match, which he never needed a mouthpiece in the first place. We found that out a month later at the King of the Ring. So getting rid of DiBiase was the first step in the birth of Austin 316 and everything that followed. And he debuted one of the most famous finishes in wrestling history that night at the tapings. So a pretty noteworthy night for Stone Cold. And that's This Week in Wrestling History. Now you know, you can send questions to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com for the mailbag. I am still very much backlogged, but I am loving the questions you guys are sending me. I'm trying to respond to as many as I can. One of these weekends coming up, I'm going to try to do a mailbag-only sound-off extra on YouTube. As long as I can get to it, I will try my best to do that and catch up on some questions. So keep sending them in. Don't forget, start using the official hashtag of the sound-off, #SolemonSter. That'll be the official one for the show. You can follow me on Twitter, @SolemonSter is the place to go. We're all over Facebook as well. Find us on there. Friend me, follow us, all that good stuff. We'll have a live thread going in the group page for Payback tonight, as we do for all of the big pay-per-view events, and Raw on Monday nights. A lot of good discussion going on there. You can make a PayPal donation always on thesolemonster.com. You can sign up for a free Audible trial, which helps the show out as well. You can listen to us in a multitude of different ways. You could do it the traditional way via Podbean or subscribe in iTunes. That's one way to do it. You can also stream us on Stitcher Radio, which I would very much appreciate. You could also leave a review for the show on Stitcher or in iTunes. We have a free app in the Google Play Store for those of you with Android devices, an unofficial fan-made sound-off app for those Windows 8 users. And you can also stream us on the website player.fm, which we were recently added to. So no shortage of ways to listen to the show. If one way doesn't work, I guarantee you there's three other ones that will. So thank you for your continued support. We'll be back next weekend with some thoughts on Payback and all the wrestling news of the week. Hopefully we'll have an Impact review back next week as well. So until then, be well, stay safe. If you are watching the Payback pay-per-view as you are listening to this, it's coming up later tonight. Enjoy it. Let me know what you guys think. And we'll see you right back here next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Sala Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
I beat the authority, and right now I stand here as the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion!
The bad.
Brock Lesnar, into the cover, hooks the leg, the streak is over.
And the ugly.
Well, we are here with the new married couple.
Now we're tag team partners for life.
Sean and Marty said the same thing once upon a time.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
What a despicable act that was.
Oh, my God.
Well, mostly the good.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007 on the SalaMonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Sala Monster sound off.